We are having a magical weekend. Let me just tell you that right now. It's been awesome. I want to welcome all of you. I want to welcome all of you watching online. Last weekend, they said we had nearly 500 people watching online. That boggles this tiny little brain of mine. But anyway, however you're here, whatever service or watching online, we welcome you and we thank you for participating in this great weekend. I want to thank those who have preached this summer and kind of helped fill in a little bit. And I think we have the best preaching in the world in our staff, in Jimmy and Brent and Scott McNeil, and really grateful for them. Also want to tell you that we have a new website that is up. It is mycrosscity.com, and if you go to Northside, it will just forward you over there. But I want you to get that locked in and your favorites and invite others to look at it, and you'd be amazed. Most people, before they attend a church now, they check out the church's webpage. That's a fact. And so we've upgraded that a little bit, and I just want you to be excited about it and bookmark it, and I want you to invite as many people as you can to take a look at it. Also, we're going to start a new series, and I'm talking fast because last night I didn't even get through half the sermon. Now, we got out on time, but I just had to quit. And so I'm going to try to get this first half a little quicker than I did last night so I can try to get to some of the back half of it. Whether I will or not, I won't. I don't know, but I'm not going to keep you long, but I want to try to get through some of this if I can. We're going to start a series on the book of Proverbs, and the book of Proverbs is about one thing. It's the word wisdom. And I want to give you some advice that I've given a lot of people through the years. And it's come back to me as being pretty sound advice. And so I'm kind of proud of this. So brace yourself. I'm going to give you what I call the Proverbs Challenge. See, what's the Proverbs Challenge? I would like for you, between now and Christmas season, you can maybe now, between now and December. And this series, by the way, is going to take us into the Christmas season. And this is actually my heart. I know most of the time we're doing three-week series, four-week series, things like that. I prefer just to preach through the Bible. That is my heart. And so I'm gonna preach until Christmas time. We'd probably do a series of Christmas, and we might have a couple little diversions and stuff. But I want to preach through the book of Proverbs. And here's the Proverbs challenge that I want to give everybody here. And I'm serious about this. This isn't just the filler in the beginning of the sermon. Would you be willing to read one chapter a day? There are 31 chapters in the book, and so that's basically a month. And if you would read one chapter per day, take you about, I don't know how fast or slow a reader you are. It takes me about 2.5 minutes to read a chapter. And you could probably read the whole book if you're a quick reader in 15, 20 minutes. But I'm not asking you to do that. I'm asking you to read one chapter per day for the next 3 months. That means you'd read the whole book 3 times before we get into our Christmas season. The Proverbs challenge, I think it would be powerful for a lot of you. One chapter per day, I think it would be awesome. You can do this if you're in the third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade, all the way up to our Bible scholars, and so we have even astronomers here in the church. How many watched the sun being blotted out on Monday? Anybody? Me and my buddy Mike watch it. There's a picture of me and Mike Ward. And a lot of people didn't notice, but I'm wearing my Titleist golf hat on top of that. And Mike and I are in-laws, and our kids are having a baby in December. And I got to look at this picture this week, and they're supposed to have a little girl, and my first granddaughter, but I got to thinking, looking at this picture, I'm starting to feel a little sorry for her. These are her grandpas on a Monday, and the word, I say that because I also, along with the grandchild thought, Mike, we're kind of arguing over what we're going to be called as grandparents. I don't know if you've ever been there. But Mike, the first day that Aubrey said that she was with child, Mike said, "Oh, I know what I'm going to be called." I said, "What is it?" I was worried because I thought I might want what he was declaring day one. So I waited with day, and he said, "I want to be called Peepaw." I said, "Not a problem. Ain't nobody calling me Peepaw ever. You get that perfect." But as I was studying this, the Greek word, believe it or not, for wisdom is the word chokmah. I can't say it correctly. It's one of those Hebrew words that has all that. It sounds like you're actually kind of choking a little when you say it. It's got all that. It's chokmah. I honestly can't say it. I don't know if it's being from the Midwest or what. But that is the word for wisdom, and it is in here over 100 times in this book. This book is about wisdom. It's about chokmah, okay? And I was thinking, again, he wants to be called people. I thought maybe I could be called chokmah, okay? People and chokmah. I don't know, maybe not. But if you have your Bibles, I hope you do, turn to Proverbs. It's right in the middle of the book. If you take your Bible, usually, and you just open it right in the middle, you're either in Psalms or I'm actually in Proverbs, just like that. It's right in the middle of most Bibles, and we're going to start the first chapter and the first verse that says, the Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, the king of Israel. Then it tells us why this is written. And I'm telling you, this is why we're preaching through it. The Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, for gaining wisdom and discipline. I know that's a naughty word in a lot of our vocabularies. For wisdom and discipline, for understanding words of insight, for acquiring a disciplined and prudent life, and doing what is right and just and fair. For attaining chokmah, wisdom. Or as I like to say, to get smart. This book is written to help you get smart. Verse 4, for giving prudence to the simple, knowledge and discretion to the young, let the wise listen and add to their learning. You never have arrived. Add to their learning, let discerning get guidance for understanding the proverbs, parables, sayings, riddles of the wise. There are 915 verses in the book of Proverbs. 915 verses. There are 31 chapters. I want to challenge you. I'm going to ask you next week, and you're either going to say yes or you're going to lie. That didn't make sense. You're all going to say yes then, right? But I really want you to take up this challenge. And the word wisdom, and it's hard for me to say in the Hebrew, chokmah, it's also hard to define. I've been asking people all week, well, how would you define wisdom? And they all say different things. And in these first few chapters, we've already read some of these words, the word understanding. There are many layers to wisdom. Insight, discretion, knowledge, righteousness. There are many layers, and I want to give you some of these layers, and I got to go quick because I am so slow on this. The first layer, if you have your notes, is a pragmatic layer. And it's natural, it's common sense. You either have it or you don't. How do you know somebody who has a lot of common sense? Let me see your hands. You know somebody, they just have common sense. They just naturally, they have the right answer, the right stuff. How many know people that have no common sense? You either have it or you don't. It's a natural thing. Some people, they just get to a point and they get to that fork in the road and they always know which way to go. It's almost like a sixth sense. I mean, some of you were designed to do certain things. Some were designed, created to sail the high seas. Some of you were designed to be a shrewd business manager. You just have that innate, whatever it is, ability. It's just a pragmatic way of living. And that's level number one. Level number two is experiential. This is not necessarily natural. This usually has to be learned through living and through making mistakes. We say sometimes through trial and error. We say sometimes I had to learn that the hard way. Yeah, because you totally flopped, right? But now you've got it. And that's not going to happen again, right? It shouldn't, because you learned it, but you learned it the hard way. And we all learn at different speeds, but we should learn from our past experience. I was called into the principal's office on my first day of junior high, and they said, hey, it was your brother Dean, right? I said, yes. And the principal just stared at me for about 5 minutes. And he said, it's one thing to learn from your mistakes. There's one thing better than that, and that's learning from your brother's mistakes. You think you would have learned from your brother? I said, I think I will. Yeah, I think I know what to do and what not to do. And some of us, we need to learn from our mistakes, even somebody else's mistake. You have to kind of experience something to figure out what to do and what not to do. Experiential. The third layer is moral. Proverbs 1:3, for acquiring a disciplined and prudent life, doing what is right and just and fair. Do you know how to do that? Some people do. Some people have the common sense, the spiritual common sense, to know the right things to do. Other people do not have that discernment. Other people are not trustworthy. They are not fair. They are not dependable. They do not have this moral chokmah. They don't have it. They just don't. And some do. Some understand what God would prefer, and others just do not have a clue. We live in a world, by the way, where most people have no clue what it is that God would want for them. There is, number four, a fourth layer I call the philosophical layer, that basically, and this is very rare, that despite the uncertainties of life, okay? Despite the uncertainties of life, despite all of the trouble, whatever you might be going through, and some people are going through sickness, some people are going through chaos, they're suffering. Some of you have experienced reversal of fortune. Some of you and certainly we know people who are going through some sort of catastrophic event, upheaval in their life. And yet some people, somehow, some way, they have a philosophical approach. They somehow rise above it, and somehow they actually thrive through that trial. They have a kind of a big worldview. They have a godly worldview. They believe deep down. They have enough chokmah. They have enough wisdom to get that God's large and in charge. Somehow he's going to work this out. And on the other side, I'm going to be better. I'm going to be a little wiser. I'm going to be a little stronger. It's all going to turn out. God's up to something. Wow, that's rare. And we have examples in the Bible. I suppose the best one would be Job, who literally lost everything, but he had the type of wisdom to say, though he slay me, yet will I trust him. Now there's a level of wisdom few of us get to. Then there's a fifth level I call spiritual. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. There is a spiritual level. There are different layers, all of these levels. I would put them into two bigger categories, wisdom and practical. Wisdom is both practical and a spiritual kind of funnel or umbrella that all the others fall under. I brought up something last night. I to be honest, I would rather not bring up. It'd be a lot easier not to talk about. After all, I was out of town when it happened, and so I can just sneak back in and talk through Proverbs and not deal with some of these things. But I really feel like God's call on my life, that it's really my job. And there are many reasons I do not want to. One is I know whatever I say, I'm going to upset people, which is not my heart or intention. I know I cannot meet everyone's expectations. And evidently, we live in a world where if people do not respond the way we think they should respond, then they're the bad person. It's as if they did it. If they do not respond to a crisis the way you think they ought to respond, well, then that they're just as bad as if they had done it. So I know some of you are going to leave today, and you're probably going to look at me that way. That's all I can gather from what I've seen on the news. But yeah, I want to talk a little bit about Charlottesville. I've heard a lot. I've read a lot. I wouldn't say I've studied it. I have studied how people have responded to it and how everybody hates what they say about it. And I have not agreed with anything that I have read or heard. Not anything except maybe from Dr. John MacArthur, who I don't agree with all the time. But boy, I feel like he absolutely nailed what happened in Charlottesville. And so I would like to just kind of rephrase it myself. When he discussed that what happened in Charlottesville was not necessarily about race. That's why when I turn the radio on or the TV on, I got to turn it off, because what they're talking about is not what I think happened. And I know you might say, well, that's easy for you to say, you know, whatever. But let me just share my heart a little bit on it. The human heart is wicked and crooked. The Bible says it is above all things deceitful. Man has gone astray. And we are selfish creatures, and we are angry creatures. Humanity is not in a good place. It has fallen, and it is corrupt. And what happened in Charlottesville is just a bunch of people running around angry and doing things, and they believe they are justified in those actions. I don't believe it had anything to do with slavery. I don't think it has anything to do with race. Now, I think there's racism, don't get me wrong, and there shouldn't be. It is wrong and sinful, and it should not be in the church of all places. The Bible says there is neither free nor slave, nor male or female in the church. We should not discriminate in any way. We shouldn't anywhere, but in the church especially. But it felt like to me the real issue was not race, but the problem of the heart. The real issue to me is sin. The real issue to me is that people have rejected Jesus, and our society is on the second and third generation of the majority of people rejecting him, and this is what you're going to get. He talked about that God had given and built in every society three restraints. Let me just touch on them briefly. This is why I didn't get through my sermon last night. I started preaching another sermon. And I got one after this that I never got to. Anyway, restraint number one is in every individual there is a conscience, okay? You have a conscience, I have a conscience. But the conscience only responds and reacts to a moral code, to a moral law. We just were talking about a moral kind of wisdom. Your conscience responds to that. But if you have a whole generation of young people who have been taught a twisted, perverted, inverted, upside down, backward moral law, then their conscience cannot function. And I'm not blaming the young people, because my generation, we have filled the young people up with whatever it is they have. But the conscience cannot recognize what is right and what is wrong. That's why you can sit there and go, why don't they think that's wrong? Why don't they? Because they just can't. That's why stuff can go on at Berkeley like has gone on, and we don't understand it, because they don't have the conscience to respond. In fact, all they do when you don't have a moral law, all you see on TV and all you see in these reports and all you see in these talking heads, even in the mainstream media, all you see is accusation and excuses. Accuse and excuse. Accuse and excuse. There's no moral code. There's no moral law. There's no conscience to respond how God would respond. So we just accuse these people and we excuse these people. And it's just a contest. And I've never seen a nation more divided in my 53 years of being alive. If there is no sound moral law, if there's no kind of wisdom in our culture that we're talking about today, you're going to get what we get. You're going to get sin, which is another word for selfishness. And, you know, we joke around about the main characteristic of this up-and-coming generation is, and I've done it many times, I think it's funny, is that we want to give them all a participation trophy. I mean, it's in commercials. It's kind of a joke. But you realize that funny little quality, when you build that in and build that in and build that in, what happens when they become of age, here's what they believe. Some of you in this room believe it, that you are the most important person in the whole world. And no, and listen, nothing will ever change your mind of that except a little godly wisdom. And that's why we live in the age of blogospheres. Everybody's got to have a blog. Why? Because we got to hear what they say. Why? Because what they say is so important, because they are so important. And so I've got a blog. I'd like you to read it. That's why we live in the age of what? Selfies. Why? Because you haven't seen me in 25 minutes. And you don't know what I'm up to. What I'm up to is very important. And I just want you to see me and what I'm having for dinner, because it's so important. And we think that. We actually think that. The conscience is crippled. People don't know the difference between right and wrong. The second restraint God placed is the family. And it's, by the way, our families in America, for the most part, are broken. God designed it. You may not like it. You may disagree with it. That just shows you don't have any wisdom. Because God designed it. And here's what God said. God said, I think there ought to be a man, and there ought to be a woman, and they ought to raise those kids and love those kids. You know what else he said? And that those parents ought to discipline. There's a lot of that in Proverbs. You're not going to like it. You're not going to like it. Talks about the rod of discipline. What? Not today. Get out, man. Yeah, discipline. You can't get to here without a little of this in here, and that's a little discipline. And we don't have that. We have so many dysfunctional, so many what we call broken homes. And when you don't have a mom and a dad, you say, why do the kids need any discipline? Well, because here's something else no one else will tell you. Because inside of every person, even the children, there's a little bit of evil. There's a little bit of we want to go our own way and do our own thing. And if that goes unchecked and you just let them keep going their own way and doing their own thing, you're going to have a monster on your hands. But we've been taught and trained, no more direction, no more punishment. Let's be their best friend. That's what they really need in this rough and tumble world. And so what happens when you don't have a mom and dad to get that evil turned around and straightened out? You have a society that is broken. And families are broken, and relationships don't exist that should exist. There is no sense of right and wrong. And by the way, that's why our school board meets for hours and hours and hours. Not on educational things, not on math, not on English, not on social studies, not on any of that. They meet for hours and hours and hours and hours discussing the LGBTQIA, SBALIDOCIOUS, however it ends. I don't know how and where it ends. It just keeps going. That's a priority to them. And yet, the real benefit for our kids is not a priority. And so the restraint of the conscience is gone. The restraint of family discipline is gone. And there's only one other built-in restraint that God ordained. You may not like it, and I understand if you don't. But God designed authority. And in society, that authority is manifested in what we call the police. And when we don't believe in them, and we are rebellious towards them, and we assault them long enough, then you diminish their authority. And if you throw out all the fear and respect for them, and I'm not saying that at times they don't deserve a little shame or whatever. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is when that is our target and that is our goal, all hell will break loose. And it is only, in my opinion, we are only witnessing the very, very beginning of a society that has turned its back basically on God. The moral conscience is not there, the family structure is not there, and the police have been stripped basically of their authority. And then the last little bridge in that river is the church. God ordained the church. That's why we say we're having a spiritual war, man, and it's real. And sometimes we feel like we are the last little thing that's keeping, you know, the floodwaters from just running crazy. Spiritual forces are at work. I will tell you, I read another article this week, I don't know where, but another coach got in big trouble because he wanted to have a prayer before a football game. That's deemed too dangerous. The people somehow in authority have got together and decided that's dangerous. That would be an infringement of maybe somebody in the corner's rights who doesn't believe the way you believe. So that has to be eliminated. But bathrooms for both sexes at the same time and shower, that's all fine because it's about people's rights and freedom, and they could be confused, and so we can't cross that line. What is up is down. What is right is wrong. Because we have removed the structure, we have removed authority, we have removed dad for the most part, we have removed the police. ESPN got a guy, there was a guy doing, he's an announcer. I always wanted to be a coach. If I couldn't have been a coach, I wanted to be an announcer because you know I can talk, right? Down, nothing, he got, okay, so they removed an announcer from a college football game that's taking place in a couple weeks in Virginia because his name, if you haven't heard this, brace yourself. His name is Robert Lee. And he is Asian. But they thought Robert Lee, Robert E. Lee, somebody could be in the place and think, hey, what's ESPN doing to us? Let's storm the booth. I don't know. I know I can't watch the news hardly anymore. Because I'm not a bright guy, but I'm telling you there is no wisdom going on in there. There's zero wisdom. And I want to finish by saying there is not an ounce, as crazy as everything is, I am not saying there is any room for any type of discrimination or racism that should not and could not, it just cannot be tolerated by the church. It cannot. But I believe all of this upheaval is less to do with that and more to do with man's heart that has turned away from God. The breakdown of moral law, the breakdown of the family, the breakdown of government authority. What people are saying, I know you can say, well, they said that about the last. What people are saying about our president is not right. It's just not right. And most of the stuff he says, I don't agree with. How he says it, I don't like. I mean, I've got some issues, trust me. I'm not just a blind follower, but what I'm saying is we are witnessing the breakdown of our culture because there's no chokmah. There's no smarts. There's no practical, there's no spiritual smarts. I had this, I didn't get to it last night because I'm slow, but if I asked you, I've got stuff in two barrels, right? And I ask you, which one of these barrels would you want? I think if you had any sense, you would ask, well, what's in each barrel, right? I would. If somebody said, I got two barrels, I want you to have one, I would say, well, what's in each of them, right? And I'm going to tell you what's in this barrel is wisdom. Right here, and this barrel is no wisdom. And I don't have all the scriptures. I'm just kicking stuff over. Feels like Jerry Lewis hasn't died yet. So just put the scriptures on the screen if you can. Man, I'm kicking all this stuff. This is not in a good spot. Ready? Scriptures, go. I need scriptures on the screen. Somebody run up there and wake those guys up. All right, I'll read some scriptures to you. It's on the other screen. You can't put it on the big one. Okay. All right. Look at chapter 2, verse 1 of Proverbs. My son, if you accept my words and store up my commands within you, turning your ear to wisdom and applying your heart to understanding, and if you call out for insight and you cry aloud for understanding, and if you look for it as for silver and search for it as hidden treasure, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God, which, by the way, that's basically repeated in every chapter. For the Lord gives chokmah. He gives wisdom. From his mouth come knowledge and understanding. He holds victory. And so in barrel number one, I want you to know in this barrel we have victory. So I just want you to see some of the stuff that's in this barrel right here. Verse 7, he holds victory in store for the upright. He is a shield to those who walk as blameless. He guards the course of the just and protects the way of the faithful ones. And you will understand what is just and right and fair and good. Every good path for wisdom will enter your heart, and knowledge will be pleasant to your soul. Discretion will protect you, and understanding will guard you. How many of you would like to say you'd like some of those things? How many of you would raise your hand and say, Proverbs 3, verse 1, my son, do not forget my teaching, but keep my commandments in your heart, and I will prolong your life. What? How many would like a prolonged life? I would. Long life. Sign me up for that. I want barrel number one, if you ask me. Long life. Go on to chapter, verse 2, that same chapter says, and he will bring you prosperity. How many would... Man, I don't even want to ask you this. I know you want prosperity. So long life and prosperity are in this barrel right here. Look at verse 3. Let love and faithfulness. Some of you say, I just can't get enough love and faithfulness. Yeah, you're not in Proverbs. love and faithfulness will never leave you. And you can write them on the tablet of your heart. You will win favor. How many would like favor? You get faithfulness, you get favor, God's favor, special favor, good stuff, favor, and a good name. How many would you like a good name on in the sight of God and man? Trust the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge Him. He will make your path straight. Hey, you want straight paths? It's in barrel number one. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and shun evil. And this will bring, get ready for this, health and to your body and nourishment to your bones. How many would like good health? I'm not writing this stuff. I'm just reading it. That's in barrel number one. You say, well, what is in barrel number two? Well, that's a good question. You're probably not going to believe what's in barrel number two. A lot of times I share this passage and people cannot believe it's even in the Bible. But barrel number two is for those who do not accept wisdom and do not apply wisdom. Key word, apply. You may read the 915 verses. You may take the Proverbs challenge, but you do not apply those principles to your life. And we read in verse 24 of Proverbs chapter 1, and since you rejected me when I called you and rejected this wisdom, you did not apply it. You just read it. You just did what the preacher asked you to do. You did not apply it to your life. You did not try to put those principles to work. No one gave heed when I stretched out my hand, since you ignored all of my advice and would not accept my rebuke. I will mock you when calamity overtakes you. So the first thing God is going to do is He's going to laugh. He's going to say, ha 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 at you. When something bad happens to you because you rejected Him and you rejected His word and you rejected His wisdom. Verse 16, or verse 27 rather. When calamity overtakes you like a storm and disaster, by the way, there's a big storm in Texas, sweeps over you like a whirlwind, when distress and trouble overwhelm you. When you reject Him, you're going to have a storm in your life. Disaster is going to take over. Verse 28, they will call to me. You'll come to your senses. Say, wait a second, I think there's a guy in the sky with all the answers. I think I'll go to him now that I'm in big trouble, right? But I will not answer. He won't be there. You won't be able to find him. I don't know which one it is. But there's, in this barrel, there is distress. I don't have time to keep reading. In this barrel, there is trouble. In this barrel, there is an absent God. You can't get him on the horn. He won't hear you. You can't find him. You can't see him. And destruction, all of these things are in barrel number two. So I ask you, which barrel do you want? And you say, I want to know what's in each barrel. Well, in barrel number one, there's good stuff. And in barrel number two, there's some stuff that's not very, you don't want. And yet we see in our culture, what are most people going through? They are going through crisis and trial and pain and destruction, and they say there is no God, and some of them have even called on Him, but He's not there. He's not there because they haven't yielded their heart. They haven't submitted their heart and lives to Him. They don't genuinely want Him. They have no intention of following Him. Their only understanding is, hey, somebody can give me something good in a moment of crisis. Other than that, they have zero comprehension of who God is and what He really wants out of their life. We're going to close. We're going to sing. And I want you to know that this book is a book that is for the here and now. There's a lot of passages that tell us how to get to heaven. There's a lot of passages that give us steps and Acts and some of the Gospels and the book of Revelation and all the letters that Paul wrote. Proverbs is a book about the here and now. It's a book about how to get along with your brothers and sisters, how to function in this world that we're living in. And if there was ever a book that would say to you that the rest of this book is true, it should be the book of Proverbs, because it is applicable to today. not about the rapture. It's not about Jesus coming back. It's not about how to get baptized. You start reading a chapter a day and you'll realize it has to do with every single part of your life, your relationships and your job and your family, your community, and how we interact with one another. It's a book about the here and now. I just, with all of my heart, I would urge you to give it a good look. Maybe bow your heads when you're finished and say, or before, or both, and say, Lord, speak to me. Speak to my rebellious heart. If you were honest, maybe you could say, Lord, I've fallen into that trap. I actually do believe I am the most important person on the globe, and I need to get away from that and realize that I have been placed here for really one reason, and that is to honor you and to give you glory. My life is not mine. I have been purchased and repurchased by you, and whatever it is you want, that's what I want. I'm the least important person. You are the most important person. And by loving you, I know that I'm probably going to have to get in the nitty-gritties of life and have to love others and be good to others, and because that's how you've designed it. And it's not easy. It's not easy because people are irritating and I'm impatient and so forth and so on. But God, I want to do it. I want to do it. I want all these different layers of wisdom. I want to get smart. I'm tired of living in a culture that isn't smart. And so I want to be that light. I will affect the long range. I will affect the hereafter by living right in the here and now. By serving you, others will take a look at my life. I have a reference in your notes, I believe, of Deuteronomy. You read that. Read the rest of that. I'm telling you, how we walk, the rest of the world, at least in our world, they will take note of how you are living, how you are leading, how you are learning, how you are loving. They will look in. And so even though this is practical, it really does affect eternity because the world will sit up and take notice. What a great book. What a great reminder. If you're here today and there's any decision you have in your heart, you want to make it. That's why we have this whole service, by the way. Just relax a little bit. I know I'm rushed. Maybe you feel rushed. Let's all just exhale. If there's something spiritual that you need to proclaim, if there's a prayer request that's on your heart, if there's a change that's going on in your life and you want to talk to somebody about it, if you're so scared you don't know what to do next and you want to pray with somebody, if you want to rededicate your heart and life, if you've never been baptized, whatever your decision, it's decision time. As Trevor leads us, let's stand and let's sing. If you have a decision, just step down here to the front.